Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Principal Financial Group teleconference. This call will be recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Jane Berenson.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jane Berenson, the editor of Inc. magazine, which is the handbook for the American entrepreneur. The magazine and our website, Inc.com, delivers real solutions for today's innovative company builders. One of our annual features is the Inc. 500, a list of fastest-growing private companies in the U.S. And I think if any of you think you may qualify for the Inc. 500, send me an email at janeb@inc.com. But today I'm serving as the moderator for this exciting program, so let's get started. Thank you for taking the time to call in today's teleclass brought to you by the Principal Financial Group. We hope that these classes conducted over the course of the year help give you an edge in growing your business. We're committed to your success and are here for you should you need any help with employee benefits for your employees or individual financial services for yourself. Just give us a call at 877-475-3444 or visit www.principal.com/teleclass. I hope you didn't get out your paper and pencils because you don't need them. Information about this class and all previous ones is available at principal.com/teleclass. Feel free to call in during our live Q&A for 15 minutes following our speaker discussion. We'll share more information on how to participate later in the call. But to queue up early, simply press star and then 1. Today we will be discussing a very important topic, one company's award-winning equation, employee financial fitness plus physical fitness equal fiscal fitness. The class will provide innovative ideas for how to strengthen the core of your business's benefits programs. For those of you who are just starting businesses, it will give you information and insight on best practices that you'll eventually want to adopt. Now, who better to provide that than the Principal 10 Best Companies for Employee Financial Security winner, Holly Lifke of Society Insurance, and Renee Schaff, Vice President, Retirement and Investor Services Growth for the Principal. We'll start with Holly first. As Vice President of Human Resources, she has championed Society Insurance's benefits program, fulfilling the group's mission to, quote, help the healthy remain healthy and to help those managing chronic conditions do so more effectively. She has more than 15 years of experience, and her responsibilities at Society Insurance include leadership development, staffing, employee benefits, and program design. She is also an adjunct faculty member at the University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh, teaching human resources management. For Renee, she is the Vice President, Retirement and Investor Services, and she will share leading insight on how companies can and are successfully managing challenging business environment of escalating healthcare costs, an aging workforce, shrinking budgets, and ever-increasing competitive pressures. Renee's team at the Principal recently unveiled a new and complementary best practices guide, the Formula for Success, which offers leading benefit strategies. Here's two websites, societyinsurance.com. You can learn more about Holly there, or principal.com/the principal 10 best to receive more information about how your company can enter to become a Principal 10 Best winner in 2008. So the class's mission today is pretty simple. By the end of the session, you will take away golden nuggets to get your company on the track to fiscal fitness. Without further delay, I'm pleased to introduce Holly and Renee. Hi, Holly and Renee.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We'll start with Renee. Because Holly's company is one of your winners, I wondered if you could explain the program to us.
Absolutely. Jane, every year the Principal sponsors a program called the Principal 10 Best Companies for Employee Financial Security. And what this is a nationwide search for the 10 best companies at providing benefits that help their employees secure a financially secure future. And the thing that's so important about this program is It is focused on employers that have fewer than 1,000 employees, and the winners are selected using an independent panel of judges. So while the principal sponsors the program, the actual winners are not chosen by the principal. And in fact, you don't even need to be a client of the principal to be eligible to enter the competition, or of course to win to be named one of the 10 best.
Now, who was on the panel? What kind of people do you solicit for that?
Jane, we use industry experts for the panel to make sure that they really have an in-depth understanding of the benefits arena. And if you were to look at the names of the judges, you'll really see it's a blue ribbon panel. For example, we have Dallas Salisbury as one of our judges, who is the head of Employee Benefits Research Institute, David Ray, who's head of Profit Sharing Council of America, Corey Rosen. It's really a blue ribbon panel of judges that are not affiliated with the principal.
That's fantastic. Now, what do the judges look for, you know, for the winners?
You know, Jane, they're really looking for strengths in key three areas. First off, they want to make sure that the benefits that are provided really are well-rounded and cover three important bases. First off, strength in retirement program. Second, making sure that the winners have very solid health and wellness programs. And then last of all, making sure that they're providing for adequate risk protection for their employees, and that would encompass life and long-term disability. But then they go beyond that. It's not only important that they have those elements of their benefits program firmly in place. We watch for, and more importantly, the judges watch for, great communication and education techniques and best practices. And they're looking for those companies that really understand from the very top of the organization all the way to the bottom that investing in employees is investing in one of their key assets. And so benefits count, and they do, in fact, contribute to a great bottom line.
So these are companies that would be kind of fabulous to work for, right?
Oh, they're incredible. They are incredible companies. Make no mistake about that.
And Holly, Society Insurance is one of these companies.
Yes.
But when you got there, the company was giving, I think, what you call traditional benefits as opposed to this kind of full panoply that Renee spoke of. Is that right?
That's a fairly good direction or summary, I would say. When I joined the company in 2000, we had very robust traditional benefits. And when I say traditional, I'm talking about your major medical type of benefits, dental insurance, life insurance. We did have both a defined benefit pension plan as well as our 401k plan, but they have evolved significantly to become a lot more contemporary. With our health program, for example, while there was good coverage for claims and services needed, we weren't very strong on the preventative side. And we have really done quite a bit within the health plan to expand on the services under a preventative and routine category that are covered for our employees and their dependents, but we've also embellished that and expanded into wellness significantly in the last few years too.
Let me just interrupt you for a minute. I think some people might not even know what a defined benefit plan is. That they're so rare nowadays at companies. Can you just go back and just explain what that is?
Sure. When you talk about a defined benefit plan, what you're thinking of is the traditional pension plan, where the company is fully funding the retirement for their employees, and at retirement they would receive perhaps a monthly payment that would be fully funded by the employer. You're right, those are not common at all anymore. And to have an organization that has that and the 401k most of us are familiar with is fairly unique.
So someone who comes to your company is eligible for the defined benefit plan plus the 401k.
Correct. The first of the quarter following their date of hire, they're eligible to participate in both plans.
That's amazing. Let's go back then now to the wellness,
mm-hmm.
because I think this is something that is on the lips of a lot of people these days as companies realize that preventive care is as important as after the fact, yes?
Absolutely. It's more important. If we can help identify somebody who is verging on becoming diabetic, if we can help them identify that, by doing a health risk assessment on site during their work time. They're able to attend to that health condition at the early stages rather than waiting till it's full-blown diabetes and perhaps has to be medically treated rather than treated with lifestyle changes. And even if they are at that diabetic stage or suffering another chronic condition, helping them track and identify that so they can manage it before that chronic condition causes additional health issues is wonderful for their quality of life and definitely helps you as an employer manage your claim costs on your health plan.
Yeah, it's a win-win for both people.
Absolutely.
But how do you find out, who might need some of this, some of the wellness program or managing?
You don't have a crystal ball, so you can't necessarily identify that. But what we do is we make health risk assessments, which they are comprised of two parts. One, people go online to do a survey, a questionnaire, if you will, so they can disclose their own health condition type information. They'll be asked about lifestyle, how much you exercise, how frequently you eat vegetables, do you wear a seatbelt when you're driving, questions of that nature. We will also do biometric testing on site where people will have their blood pressure screened, have cholesterol screening, blood glucose levels screened, health or height and weight. And all of that information is maintained confidentially by a third party. I, in the Human Resources Department, do not see any of this detail. But it's brought together by a medical authority that can look at that information and then give feedback individually to our employees who, whether they're in our health plan or not, are all welcome and encouraged to participate in this wellness program, this wellness benefit. So then the feedback to the individual employees about their health condition is confidential and direct. We don't have to identify who's at risk. The process helps to do that.
So, for instance, do you do this once a year? Do you have these health fairs once a year?
We do.
Uh-huh. And what's your participation level in that?
Last year's participation level was 38%. Now, that is supposed to be quite high, but it's lower than what I'm shooting for.
It's high judging from our company.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of people who don't really want to know.
I think you're right. A lot of us don't. What we are doing this year, though, and it's such a small thing, but we think it's going to make a difference, and what we're trying to do is encourage participation. At this point, we are going to be providing a $25 gas card. Everybody could use those right now.
Oh, yes.
For anybody that goes through both parts of that process. What we're hoping to do is generate more data over a larger chunk of our population so we have a better sense of what our healthcare needs as a whole company are. Then we can better design education on site to help with those specific conditions. In years to come, we're hoping to move away from a participation incentive to a health improvement incentive where we'll encourage people to make changes in their life that result in improvements in some of those biometric tests I mentioned earlier.
Yes. Now, I know that some, the kinds of companies that Inc. often writes about will have competitions within, within the workforce,
mm-hmm.
Who can lose more weight, who can give up smoking. Is that one of the things that you encourage, or what do you think about that?
We have done some of that. We have shied away. There are some non-company-sponsored weight loss competitions that happen within some of our departments, but what we have tried to do is have contests around healthy activities. So we will have walking contests. We will have exercise competitions that can either be competitions between groups or individuals, or we are simply providing a reward if you reach X number of minutes of aerobic activity over a three-month period. So we're working more on the behavioral side right now and a little bit less on the results side, which is what you get when you're looking at maybe percentage of body fat loss and that sort of thing.
Exactly. And has this been successful? I mean, what's your experience with
this
so far?
It's been very positively received. I think it's been very positive from a morale perspective. I think it does, for the period of time that you run those contests, generate increased participation in physical activity. Do I think it makes long-term lifestyle changes for the participants? My jury's still out on that.
Okay. Now, when you decided to change from the traditional benefit package you originally had and this more elaborate, mm-hmm. how did you get that through with your CEO, and how did that work on a company basis?
Sure. I should say that I am fortunate in that both my CEO and COO are open and receptive to these topics. That's huge. As Renee mentioned before, you have to have all of your top management supportive in order for the arguments to even be heard. But beyond that, I needed to make a business case. And in making that business case, our employees are, as trite as it sounds, they are our asset. We don't have a mine of insurance out back we dig up. We make promises. And our employees are the people that make those promises happen. Their health and well-being, their ability to be reliable and dependable because they're healthy, makes a tremendous difference in whether we're able to keep those promises to our insureds. So from a business perspective, I could create the argument that, yes, we're going to spend X dollars here or here on this program, but it's going to, first of all, help us be more reliable and do a better job for our insureds, but it's also going to help our morale and our retention. We have, and our benefits, I believe, have played a role in this. In 2000, we had a turnover rate of about 35%, which is high for our industry. Right now, we're running actually at, I think, 4% for 08, but it's early.
Wow.
We finished last year at 8.2%, I believe.
Wow.
For some companies, that's high, but I honestly believe that zero is too low. You need a little bit of change and shifting going on.
Yes, exactly. Now, and do you credit this this retention rate with your wellness and these various programs?
I believe taking our benefits from that real traditional approach to one that allows people at the beginning of their career, the middle of their career, the end of their career to get what they need, I believe that has helped greatly in our retention. Perhaps even more importantly, I'd add two other things. Partnering with good providers, in this case we do work strongly with the principal on many of our benefits, but also developing and communicating solid communication so that employees understand what they do have. You can have great benefits that are misunderstood and will have zero impact on retention and recruiting.
So when someone comes into your to be hired there, how does that affect, you know, whether people want to work at Society Insurance in the first place?
The recruiting process itself?
No, the benefits, and I know that when I, you know, hire people, you know, after they find out, you know, what the job would entail, I mean, one of their first questions after that is, you know, what are the benefits?
Right.
So that might help you a great deal to hire really great people.
It does, and what we've tried to do is develop collateral materials, brochures, and documentation that's easy to understand, that our recruiters can communicate consistently the same type of information to each person, but then those materials can go back to a significant other, perhaps, that is helping to make that decision so that they can see all of the benefits. We have a trifold that gives all of that detail, but just the right amount of detail to help that person decide whether we're the best fit for their career.
Yes. Now, usually you think of benefits as costing anywhere, I think it's gone way up, but between 30 and, 40% of the salary? What do benefits cost at this point?
Right now for us, we're right in the 36, 37%.
All right, that's incredible. And do you think that over time that these programs that you have will lower the cost for your company of benefits, healthcare benefits?
I would hope it would lower. What healthcare and health cost trends tell us is what we can truly expect is to perhaps slow the rate of increase. Healthcare costs have continuously run in double digits in terms of increase. I would love to think that we could actually reverse the trend and see our expense lower, but with the continued inflation in healthcare, I think it's going to be difficult to actually go backwards on that when you have a continuously aging population that will need additional medical needs.
Exactly. Now, can you tell us a little bit about your 401k?
Sure. We have a 401k, and that too has evolved. It was a nice program back in 2000, but it had very limited flexibility for our employees. Now our 401k plan really has every bell and whistle, I believe, that's available at this point. We have great access to individual account information via the website that the principal provides. People are able to make changes in their deferral rate and in their investment options through that website, so the control is all in their hands. And we do a good job in terms of getting communication to people about it. One of the really outstanding features of our plan is that over the last 10 or 11 years, the first 6% that our employees have deferred of their salary, we have matched at a rate of 125%.
That's excellent.
And that's something that we do on a discretionary basis. Our board makes that decision each December, but you can see where an employee putting 6% in may have received 7.5% in additional match into their account each of the last 10 years. When you couple that with the fully funded pension plan, it's really very rich in terms of helping our employees plan for their future retirement.
You know, I was reading in the paper this morning that people spend a lot of time, you know, deciding what kind of cell phone they want to buy, or, you know, new DVD player, and they spend much more time doing that than they think about, you know, what investments they should have for retirement. And I know I kind of feel the same way. One wants to avoid some of these things. How do you get people to not avoid?
One of the best things we've done in recent years is we have added an offering, again, from the principal called Retire Secure. This allows us to bring professionals in that will work one-on-one with our employees to look at our employees' individual needs confidentially and help our employees determine if they have done what they need within their plans to meet their needs. Do they need to make changes in deferral? Do they need to spend a little bit more time in terms of deciding the right investment mix? These very capable professionals come in and help the individuals, but they have the employees' best interest at heart. There is no motivation on the part of those professionals around sales or trying to convince people to buy more products. And what we have found is people that maybe know they should take that time that never do. This last year, because there was an opportunity to do it on-site during work time, they took advantage of that opportunity, perhaps brought in their spouse, so that they could sit down and look at the decisions they've made. Most of our employees came out of that experience making some modest adjustments, but largely very comfortable and happy with the decisions they've made so far. But I think sometimes we have to help ourselves, if you will. Creating an appointment to review your financial condition is something we can easily neglect, but if your employer makes that opportunity available on site with a qualified professional, then you're a little more likely to get it on your calendar.
Now, how do you find these qualified professionals? For the people listening in, if they wanted to do this kind of thing, you know, where do they find people like that aren't involved in selling, you know, mutual funds themselves and getting commissions and that sort of thing?
I would strongly recommend that you, if you have a 401k partner, and again, for us, that is the principal, to me, that's been the best source. I've had a number of vendors over probably 5 years approach me offering this opportunity. It sounds like their motivation is to help your employees, but when you really dig into how they're compensated, what their motives are, it's really to get access to your employees to sell more benefits to them. By working with the principal and talking to them about the professionals that they have, these are principal employees, I was very confident and secure in the idea that their motivation is really to help our employees take the best advantage of the benefits they're already offered. But not only that, they're able to help us as an employer educate our employees on what they have. So in this case, I worked with a partner that we already had a relationship with. They provided the best service. But I would be careful as you select a partner, making sure of what their motivation and desires are.
Renee, is this something that the principal has started relatively recently, this kind of partnership to help people with their 401ks, or is this something that the principal has been doing for a long time?
We've had a long tradition of helping people understand and really make good use of their 401k programs, but the specific program that Holly is referring to is one that we've rolled out within the last couple of years. And just to kind of add to what Holly is saying, the one thing that we've learned in working with employers of all sizes is that people are absolutely overwhelmed with making decisions about how much to save and how to get themselves ready for retirement. And what we've learned is that the easier you can make it, the more automatic you can make it, the better off the retirement program works. And so we've been very, very sure and very proactive in working with our clients and with the advisors that work with those clients, that we're talking about automatic enrollment options, that we introduce the concept of automatic deferral increases, The one-on-one guidance that Holly has been referencing is so important, whether that's delivered through a Retire Secure program or whether that's delivered by a financial professional that the employer decides to bring on site. And then offering life cycle funds, lifestyle funds, to take the guesswork out of investing. The more we can do to help demystify saving for retirement, the better off everyone is. And I think that's what Holly has really been speaking to.
Renee, you put that very well. That's exactly what we're feeling.
Now, have you noticed that more people are calling you up to ask for, you know, a one-on-one guidance session because of all the stories in the newspaper about, you know, recession? Are people worried about this, and can you respond quickly to their concerns?
That's a good question. I have not seen an increase in requests because of that, but I think some of it may have been the nature of the most of our timing. It was late summer, early fall when a lot of people had the last opportunity to sit down with somebody from the principal one-on-one. So they may have gone into some of this a bit more confident than somebody that wasn't paying attention, but I'm hypothesizing there.
Well, in the life cycle funds, maybe you could explain. I mean, that presumably would kind of whether or not a recession would not influence your decision to go into that or not to go into it. Is that right? I mean, can you explain what a life cycle fund is?
I'd be glad to. A life cycle fund or a lifestyle fund is one that is managed in either one of two ways. It's either managed with a target date for retirement. So someone would say, I plan to retire in the year 2020. Then the individual holdings within that mutual fund are managed so that as I approach the year 2020, the holdings within that fund become more of a stable value. They become less subject to the vagaries of the equity markets. The other kind of a lifestyle or life cycle fund is a risk-based one where someone will say, I am an aggressive investor versus I am a very conservative investor. And the fund then would be managed according to that. With a risk-based fund, it's important that the participant take a risk profile or test themselves on their risk tolerance periodically. But in either case, your point is well taken, Jane, in that the fund manager, the portfolio manager who's managing either the life cycle or the lifestyle fund, be it target-based or risk-based, is taking into consideration the economic climate, and they're managing the portfolio to the best return, taking into consideration either a target date for retirement or a risk profile. It's a good do-it-for-me choice that's really well-suited to the average investor.
That's excellent. That's excellent. I wonder if everyone takes it, and Holly, maybe you can respond to this. Does everyone take advantage of these benefits, or do some people not bother?
Within our 401k plan, we currently have a participation rate in excess of 96% of our population, and on average, they're deferring over 7% of their salary. So we have an exceptionally high degree of participation. In the last few years, I've made a practice of personally reaching out and touching that remainder that's not participating.
And why would someone not participate?
In some cases, you may have somebody who's gone through an exceptionally difficult financial situation, very today and now, and they simply cannot get their minds around trying to put away even a little bit for the future. And in those situations, I wrap around with them again every 6 months because sometimes it is just a very momentary kind of thing that they can work their way out of, excessive debt, bankruptcy, health issues, different things that have come up. In other cases, everybody runs into an employee periodically whose logic defies my reason. And, you know, there are only so many battles worth fighting.
Yes, exactly.
But even in that group, though, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I found even in that group, even sitting down, somebody who I do not consider myself to be a financial professional, and I certainly don't advise, But what I do encourage is participation, and I'll start out with, you know, even if you do 2% right now, and showing them what they're potentially giving up in match by not participating. I've been able to get some inroads there and get people started, because I think studies show time and time again to start the practice and the behavior of savings builds upon itself. Sometimes it's that first time you say yes to that 401k deferral, and when they figure out if you're on a traditional and not a Roth plan, the tax advantages to that, then they figure out when they get that next raise, well, maybe I can do a little more. That and the Step Ahead program that we have is kind of neat, because that actually allows employees to trigger an automatic increase in their deferral rate, I think, each year. So there's some different ways, but really that one-on-one, whether it's the principal sitting with them, or sometimes they do want to talk to a face they know that can help them understand if this makes sense for them.
Do you also give classes, kind of education classes, as a group as well as individually?
We do. I personally don't find those to be quite as effective, but we
uh-huh.
do.
So you would suggest to people who are listening that if they can afford to have the one-on-one, that this is definitely the way to go.
There's a much greater impact. You have to know your employee population, though. We have a relatively highly educated population. I'm generally not getting in front of people trying to explain what a 401k is. In prior positions, I have been in that situation. And there, where you're really teaching people what a 401k is and why it matters, I really think the best place to start there is in the group classroom kind of session, to give people a foundation of understanding, and then follow it up with a one-on-one if you can.
Okay. I should interrupt us all and say that I hope people are getting into line for questioning, and all you have to do is press the star and one. Renee, let me ask you, your company, the principal, has looked at a number of excellent companies over the years in this program. What are some of the things that they share?
I think one of the real hallmark of the winners is this absolute deep-seated zeal for gaining a really deep understanding of what motivates their employees, and then doing the best job that they can to formulate and to fashion their benefit programs around the unique needs of their employees, and really making sure that they're doing a good job of providing the retirement benefits, health benefits, risk protection, communicating everywhere they can in terms and in ways that the employees understand, so that they make good use of those benefits. And then within each of those pillars, within the retirement pillar, the health pillar, making sure that the best practices are being deployed throughout. And Holly's just done a really nice job of communicating many of the best practices for both wellness and for retirement. But we really see that those are the types of things that are common and widespread amongst the winners. I would say that the winners, the culture, the kind of culture that they have is typically a very inclusive culture, one that really celebrates the value of the employee, and they're very concerned about the financial health and the physical health of their people, and that really translates into fiscal health for the company in terms of better productivity, reduced absenteeism, better morale, many of the things that really do lead to better client service for the customers of those companies, and ultimately a better bottom line.
Yes. Holly, has this been your experience since you've been at Society?
Absolutely. A number of the things we've talked about already translate nicely to the bottom line, being able to reduce your turnover from 35% to 8% and some, the dollars saved and the ability to focus on your core business is tremendous. And I do believe culturally the way we have made changes in our benefits, some of which are not dollar and cents benefits, but they're very cultural, offering flexible scheduling, along with a health club membership, so you can kind of pick and choose when you go and work out throughout your day. Doing things like that communicate culturally we do care. We're a business, and we're a business first, but we do care about all the people that make our business what it is. You have to make sure your processes, the decisions you make are supportive of that culture you're trying to create. And sometimes you have to examine what you've done. But I do believe that they have strongly helped us succeed as a company, both in terms of profitability and growth.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's never discussed when people talk about rising healthcare costs is the fact, you know, something that both of you brought up, which is retention and how expensive it is to retrain employees. Holly, can you put an actual kind of dollar figure on that? Or
there are a number of guidelines. Depending on the nature of the sophistication of the position you're trying to fill, whether it's an entry-level manufacturing position with maybe very basic skill levels or a middle manager or a technical professional, you can be spending anywhere from one time to five times that individual's salary in your retraining, recruiting, and placement costs. So if you look at it that way, if I've got a $50,000 position and it's going to cost me $250,000 to backfill it, there's a lot of value in trying to retain that person, assuming you've got the right person the first time.
Yes, exactly. Now, could we get back to just disease management? And I realize that I'm kind of interested in this because I think, you know, that's something that seems so tremendously helpful.
Mm-hmm.
What about things like smoking? You know, do you hire people who smoke? Do you discourage, you know, I mean, what are your policies there?
Good questions, and I'm going to separate them a little bit. On the smoking issue in particular, we don't select based upon whether people smoke or not, but we do have a smoke-free campus. That means there is nowhere on our property, indoor or outdoor, including in an employee's car, where you are allowed to smoke. If you choose to smoke, you need to leave the property, period. That in and of itself speaks volumes, and it does encourage people that have that maybe join us and have smoked to cut down or reduce. And we have offered smoking cessation programs to help. The last two times we have made that offer, we haven't had any takers, but I honestly believe that's an indicator of how few smokers we still have at this point. And we do make sure that potential employees are aware of that practice and policy before they join us. It's possible some people do self-select and chose not to join us because they know they're not going to be able to smoke on campus. On the disease management side, this is really something we've put in place. That process takes a look at our claims experience and the medications our employees are purchasing to identify what already existing chronic conditions people are being treated for. And what that program does is if I am, maybe I have a chronic heart disease or I have respiratory issues, that program allows and helps the employees identified and their dependents to better manage that health condition so it does not, you do not end up with as many acute situations. If I'm
right.
suffering from asthma, I learn better how to manage my asthma and have fewer ER visits.
And would this also apply to the children?
Anybody
kids seem to have asthma now, so so that would also apply to an employee's child?
Absolutely.
And are the children then brought in, or are they, how does that work?
This is all, now we need to separate the health risk assessment and the disease management.
Okay.
Health risk assessment is to help employees identify what they don't know is lurking.
Okay, all right.
And that's right now geared to our employees only. I expect next year to expand it to spouses. Disease management looks at those health conditions that already exist, and that is directly through our health plan. So the employer is not involved except as the payer. So the healthcare TPA, third-party administrator, works directly with that patient or with the parent of the patient to make sure they're following all of their therapeutic recommendations that they're receiving from their physician.
Okay. Well, I think maybe we could open things up for questions now.
Thank you. Today's question and answer session will be held electronically. We ask today that you please refrain from naming any specific websites or companies in your questions, and please also use broad examples for an industry. If you'd like to ask a question, please press *1 on your phone. Also, please deactivate any mute function before signaling to be sure your signal can reach our equipment. Once again, that's *1 to signal for a question. A voice prompt on your phone line will indicate when your line is open. Looks like we'll go first to a question from Andy Spazzali.
Hi, this is relating back to the health fair that you spoke about. Our question is, how large would a group typically need to be to have a health fair? And then how cost-effective would it be if you could go as low as, say, 25 lives or below? How cost-effective would that be for a company?
This is Holly. I do believe you'd be able to find a vendor that would work with you with as few as 25 lives. If you have either a fully insured plan where you're working with an insurer, or you are doing you're self-supporting, self-insured, and you have a third-party administrator, I would talk to them or to your broker and ask them specifically about health risk assessments. A health risk assessment allows that testing and questioning that I mentioned. Health fairs sometimes get more into just broad information. And the health risk assessment, I think, is more what you're looking for. There are studies out there that are broad, but some will say a dollar spent on an HRA will help you save $1.5 in terms of avoided claims. Everybody's experience varies, though.
Thank you. Once again, that is star one to ask a question. We'll go next to Pierre Pinozzo.
Hello. Thank you for taking my question. Holly, I commend you for having health fairs. As a professional reflexologist, I often attend health fairs and introduce people to reflexology, and it's something that they really enjoy. But I have a question as far as absenteeism is concerned. Have you found that with your wellness program, the absentees rate has been affected? And also, do you offer flexible spending accounts? I'm often asked if insurance covers services such as reflexology, and right now it does not. However, flexible spending accounts can be used for such services if they are prescribed by a doctor.
Yes, we do offer flexible spending accounts both for medical and dependent needs. And, yes, that would, you're right. If it's a prescribed service, it would be covered under that flexible spending account. I apologize. I lost track of your first part of the question.
With absenteeism, have you?
Oh, absenteeism. I do believe we have had a great success in reducing absenteeism. I don't know how much of it is related to our health and wellness. I think more of it is based upon changes we made in our paid time off benefits. So that people didn't feel like they were going to lose sick days if they didn't take them. I believe that had a much stronger impact. What I think we probably struggle with a little bit more now is what's called presenteeism, where people are ill, really shouldn't be coming to work, but are coming to work because they either have a sense of responsibility that pushes them to get to the office, or because they are concerned about losing time off benefits or something else. But our absenteeism rates are very low at this point.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, I would like to remind everyone it is star one to signal for a question. It appears at this time that we have no further questions in queue, but we'll pause just one moment to give everyone an opportunity to signal.
Okay. I think I'll leap in here with a question of my own. One of our callers asked about a company that was smaller, 25 or fewer employees, and I wondered what should micro companies consider in terms of the benefits? What are the basic benefits that a small, you know, just growing company should consider?
I think we have to be careful to avoid a one-size-fits-all approach to that question.
Uh-huh, okay.
So I would encourage that business to, you know, identify what is the culture they're trying to create. Even if you've got two or three employees, there's a reason you've created that business, and there's a feeling you have about what that culture should be. Talk to your employees. Now, tell them you can't give them everything they want, but ask what is important to them. What are the things that really, working for that small business, maybe makes it a little bit difficult for them on a personal side? I think typically you're going to hear health insurance. And sometimes small employers feel like they have to find a way to purchase health insurance for their employees. In many cases, you may be able to allot dollars to that employee so that they can go out and purchase it on their own when you're just too small to be able to purchase it for them. And you can look at industry groups that support small businesses. You can also look at area chambers of commerce that frequently have plans available for small groups if you do decide to go that way. or even working with one agent on a personal level where each of the employees works with that agent can also help you find some great benefits.
Well, that's very smart. Now, you also suggested that there are things besides 401k and health care in terms of benefits that employees might value. Do you also deal with that kind of thing at Society, for instance, you know, flexible time or, you know, more vacation, less vacation?
Yes.
Is that part of your program?
Yes, we made these changes at the beginning of 2001 and implemented two real critical programs, I think, that have helped in our retention efforts. One is introducing a flexible scheduling policy, and it actually is, I think, less than a page and a half. It's not a very long policy. We did not micromanage it, but what we find employees are looking for is flexibility in how they blend their personal world and their business world. And if we can find ways to do that that meet our business needs, we truly have a win-win. So we indicate the business needs must be met, but you actually have quite a bit of flexibility to adopt a schedule. Small businesses often are in a better position than larger businesses to offer that work flexibility, and that's a tool that's tough to compete with when you're large. So I think that's something that a small employer should really dive into and take advantage of. The other thing we did was we eliminated our vacation bank and our sick leave bank, and we created instead a paid time off bank. So that employees at different points in their lives, they may need more time off to care for sick elders or sick children. Other times in their life, they may want more time off to use for personal time or for vacation. Having a plan that allows them to use the time the way they choose to allows them to have a benefit that meets their needs.
So that sounds kind of exciting. So that they each year they would say I'm putting in 2 days into this bank, that sort of thing.
No, we give them a specific amount of time based upon their tenure with the company, but they completely decide when and how to use it. They don't have to. Some policies, if I have to stay home with my sick child, I'd have to call in the company, and in order to get paid, I'd have to say I'm
right.
ill.
Right. Yes. Okay.
We wanted to take that out. We wanted honesty, so they use the time as they see fit.
That's great. Now, you mentioned to one of the callers about people coming to work sick.
Yes.
And this is one of my, you know, bugaboos. And I'm constantly telling people to go home. Go home. And they look at me like I'm kind of insane.
Mm-hmm.
But they should go home, shouldn't they?
They should.
And as a boss, one should encourage people to go home if they're sick.
Yes. But at the same time, we should be treating our employees as adults and expecting them to make those decisions prudently. So that's my bugaboo.
Okay.
I have had two situations in the last 12 months, one where a young woman came to the office wearing a mask. Talk about setting off alarms.
Wow.
And she had strep. She had strep throat and didn't want to go home to her child. I didn't invite her. I directed her to go home or not be here. She could be where she wanted to be but not here. Another individual was told to see a neurologist in order to check for meningitis. She came here between appointments and was going to work for a few hours. I had to respectfully ask her to leave the property. And it's difficult to put your employer in that position because we shouldn't be the parent.
No. On the other hand, I do think people, you know, always want to do such a good job at work
right.
and be productive, and you know, and so you know, I understand why they do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate though that they do.
Yes.
Well, I think you know we heard some really important things today, and you know, just kind of sum up a little bit. I think, you know, one which a number of people have mentioned is that you need to develop a company culture that celebrates the value of the employee. And I'll just get a little plug into principle here that it is one of the best places to work in the United States. So congratulations to Principle for that. And obviously Society Insurance is also a great place with the benefits. Secondly, to invest in an employee's financial and physical wellness, that is the key to a company's future, and that clear communication on employee benefits is really half the battle. If there are no more questions, I think that's a wrap for today. And if you missed anything, classes are reported and summarized and easily accessed 1 week after today on www.principal.com/teleclass. If you've liked what you've heard, please forward this invitation to a friend. If you go onto the site, you'll see that our 2008 class calendar, our next class is on April 29th at 12 p.m., that's Central Standard Time, and we'll feature Kim Kleeman of Shakespeare Squared, who just happens to be an Inc. 500 honoree. And we want to hear from you. You'll get an email survey today, and your feedback will help us develop really great future programs. Finally, a few big thank yous. Thank you, Renee. Thank you, Holly, for your expertise and wisdom. And thank you to all our listeners for your participation in the first program of 2008. We know you're busy, so on behalf of the principal, we'd like to thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to call in. We hope you gained valuable insight on how to grow your business. Log on to www.principal.com/teleclass to sign up for additional classes and to locate principal representative in your market. Have a great month. It's Jane Berenson signing off.
This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect and have a nice day.
Okay. Holly, great job.
I am so sorry about cutting that so tight, Renee.
Oh, you know what? You pulled it out, and it was fabulous. Thank you, thank you, thank you.